Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. Ryan Wood is back with us and we have Tom Silverstein. And guys, we're getting ready. You get back and we're about to go on the road again. So you're already used to a little bit of travel and they're heading to Arizona to face the Cardinals. And really, guys, we can jump straight into this because it's an intriguing game to me for on so many levels. Because you have a Cardinals team that's lost four in a row. And so, obviously, the Packers will be favored to win this game. But Arizona, in the four losses, it's been a grand total of 9 points. So, that alone makes this game intriguing. And I'll just let you guys just kind of, you know, weigh in and thoughts on just the battle that the Packers have, you know, could be in this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this game. You know, I don't know who Arizona's going to start at quarterback, whether they're going to start Kyler Murray or Jacoby Brissett. I assume it's going to be Jacoby Brissett, but, you know, that's two different defensive game plans because Murray's not going to stay in the pocket and Brissett is. So that's a challenge for the defense. I don't know. This is just kind of it strikes me as one of those midseason games that I don't really give a crap.
Kind of like last week.
Well, you know, Cincinnati had a little more intrigue because Flacco was playing for the second time, and you knew they had some killer wide receivers, and you're waiting to see how the Packers came out of the bye. But this one is, man, I would hate to be, is it Fox? Is it on Fox this week? Yeah. I don't know how they're going to sell this one.
Well, first of all, dearly beloved, it is good to be gathered with you guys again today.
There you go.
It was a different week for me. The wedding went phenomenal. And boy, it sure didn't seem like I missed much at Lambeau Field. Which, you know, this whole idea, and this translates to this week too, this whole idea of like good wins, that's just so overblown. Who cares? Who cares? Like, it's October. Stack wins, right? Would you rather have a lethargic win last week, this week? Or would you rather be the Philadelphia Eagles losing at the Giants, second straight game, or the Buffalo Bills losing at the Falcons, and just win, right? They got things to get better at, and this is another opportunity this week to do that. When I look at this game, it's all about – it's not about the X's and O's to me. It's all about you are facing a desperate opponent. You are facing an opponent that desperately wants to not lose five straight games and is playing at home. That through 3 weeks this season was thinking, hey, wild card run, right? Or maybe an NFC West run, a potential playoff appearance. Things change quick in the NFL. And, you know, I get that they've lost by, what, a total of 9 points?
Right.
It doesn't matter. Bad teams lose games. Good teams win games. That's the NFL. It doesn't matter how close these games are. If you're not a good team, you're going to lose close games. All games are close. So now Jonathan Gannon might be on the hot seat. They have that urgency to stop the bleeding. And when I think of the games the Packers have not won this season, it was in large part because they did not match the desperation of their opponent. Mm-hmm. Cleveland Browns, 0-2, playing at home. They were desperate not to go 0-3. They didn't match that urgency. Dallas Cowboys, for all the talk about Micah Parsons coming back to Dallas, Dallas was also well aware that Micah Parsons was coming back to Dallas and they were playing at their home field. They didn't match that urgency. This is a chance for the Packers not just to win a road game for the first time this season, but can they match that desperation that they are going to encounter against the Cardinals? because they will be they are a desperate team. They're going to have to do that, and we'll see if they do.
That's true because, I mean, the Packers are no different than other teams, trying to match that energy on the road. You know, obviously a lot of teams play better at home, and as of this point, the Packers just haven't been able to do that. I guess as a follow-up to that, Spoon, as far as the whole style points don't matter at this point in the season, are you kind of in the same boat?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're winning, it's good. But, you know, what really matters is how you play against the best teams. But you can't lose to the bad ones. Right. You just can't lose to the bad ones. Mm-hmm. And this is one where you got to take advantage of the fact that that team is either playing with a backup quarterback or has a quarterback controversy, you know, might not have its number one wide receiver. There's just a lot of things that say you got to win this game, and whether the style points are good or not, it doesn't matter. But, you know, figure out a way to beat them. And that's been kind of a challenge for the Packers. You know, and it's not that they've been losing games, but it's not like they've been, you know, cruising through this at all either.
Right, absolutely. We can stick with defense and talk into that because, Ryan, I know we've kind of talked a lot about and you've been thinking about the pass rush, how it started and how it is now, especially because at this point other teams have film on this Packers team, and defensively it's like, okay, here is what worked against stopping Michael Parsons, and here, you know, the rest of the group in terms of just getting the ball out, you know, quickly, you say that opposing quarterback. So, you know, what have been your thoughts just on, you know, that pass rush, and I guess what are you kind of curious about when you think about this defense?
Well, it's exactly what you just said. The pass rush hasn't changed. I mean, Mike Parsons is still there. Whether he's getting held or not, who cares? Like, again, that is so overblown to me. Is he getting held and it's not being called? Yeah. But so is many,
I think
many.
Miles Garrett doesn't get held.
That's the reality of playing life in the trenches in the NFL. Every play. No matter, not just Micah Parsons, every play, whoever is getting held and is not getting called. Of course Micah Parsons getting held and is not getting called. So is a lot of other people, all right? You got to figure it out. Yeah, the pass rush hasn't changed. He's still there. Rashawn Gary's still there. Lucas Van Ness, we'll see if he's there, obviously, with the injury. But he had a sack last week. Pass rush has not changed. The quarterbacks have. The book is out on this pass rush. You cannot hold the ball.
Yeah.
You have to catch and release. And whether it's Jacoby Brissett or Kyler Murray, next week Aaron Rodgers, the week after that Bryce Young, every single quarterback's going to follow the same blueprint. They're not dumb. They know they have to get rid of the football lightning quick, and that's what you saw Dak Prescott do. You saw Joe Flacco do that twice. The quarterbacks have changed, and now the Packers need to figure out a way not to get nickel and dunked, nickel and dimed throughout, you know, a game and throughout a drive. They have to adjust to that. My big question is, I understand Xavier McKinney on the back end is a huge looming presence. The one thing this Packers defense does not do is give up explosive plays. They don't take the ball away, and they haven't been getting home either on the pass rush. They don't give up explosive plays. Xavier McKinney has a lot to do with that. But Xavier McKinney is an all-pro safety. He very well might be the best safety in the NFL. You have got to figure out a way to have him matter more than for just prevent. Like, he's got to be, if you want impactful plays, he's the guy that's got to do it. So do you just keep him back there on the back end? Do you keep him in that prevent way of just don't give up explosives down the middle of the field? Or do you move him around a little bit, try to get him more involved? Because the reality is, whether he's there or not, the pass rush is so quick. They're so dominant up front. Quarterbacks aren't even holding on to the ball long enough to test the deep middle. So how do you adjust to this now that blueprint's out? Whether it's this week, next, at some point, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, defensive coordinator Spoon, I guess in your, you know, thoughts, you know, how do you kind of counter when a team throws just like those quick games, the check downs? How do you do that while making sure Edrin Cooper doesn't disappear and Xavier McKinney and like those type of guys and get them involved? You know, how do you think they can counter that?
Well, I'm not, you know, I am not a defensive coordinator. But, you know, I would think that you would want to at least threaten some sort of pressure, and then you would want to drop guys into coverage. So sometimes, you know, I didn't really see any defensive linemen zone dropping to maybe take away some of those checkdowns across the middle. Really, we just saw a four-man rush the entire game. And you know, other than moving Micah Parsons inside a couple times, I didn't think there was much creativity to it. Now, maybe you don't, you know, you held them to 18 points and you won the game, and creativity be damned. So it wasn't, you weren't really threatened to lose that game at any point. But at some point, you know, you wanna be a defense that doesn't just catch. You know, you wanna be a defense that forces the issue, because you're gonna have to do that at some point. You're just gonna have to. And I don't think they have worked on that very much. And this might be the week that they need to do it, you know, especially if Brissett is the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, then maybe you need to come at him and use some of these guys who've got some pass rush. Especially, you know, I can see the four-man rush when you have Devontae Wyatt and you have Lucas Van Ness healthy. But now you're probably not going to have either one of them. So, you know, you can't – I don't know if you can count on a four-man rush.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to do something.
Yeah.
You know, the way that I see it, this Packers defense has proven that it is very good, because, what, 4 out of 5 games they've held opponents under 20, and they've done that without the help, without the assistance of takeaways. They are very good. But you can't be a great defense if you don't take a ball away. Like, that's the dividing line between great and not great. You have to take away the football. So no matter how good they are very good. You know, keeping opponents off the scoreboard is the name of the game. They do that, and they do it the hard way by actually just stopping you. But when you have fewer takeaways than any team in the NFL other than the New York Jets, you're not a great defense. And so that's it. I mean, it's that simple. They have to take away the football to be a great defense. They are not there yet, but they are very good.
Yeah. I think the thing that's fascinating, and Spoon, we talked about this after the game, Ryan, when we watched the defense, like, there are opportunities for them to get takeaways, but they just haven't always done it. And a play that I brought up was Carrington Valentine did a really good job on coverage against Ja'Marr Chase, but instead of putting two hands up to maybe even attempt to try to catch it and get an interception, he batted it down. So it's like you see some moments where maybe they could have punched the ball, maybe they could have tried to pick it off, but they just didn't. So it'll be interesting to see how much they might try to adjust that and tweak that, and if they'll do it, you know, heading into this game and beyond. Here's a question for both of you guys. Obviously, no right or wrong answer. So you have Kyler Murray, you know, he's speedy, he's elusive, he's quick. And you have Jacoby Brissett, who in the game against the Colts, 320 passing yards and 27 points, were both season highs for the Cardinals. Which quarterback do you think would create the most challenges for this Packers defense, Murray or Brissett, Spoon? Make you think a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Murray's probably provides more, because, and you can't just come at him with a million guys. You know, you can't overrush him because you don't want him, you know, running all over the place. You really got to worry about that tight end. And so I think you'd rather have a guy who'd be in the pocket and you can kind of control your zone defenses and things. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals use both those guys on Sunday. You know, that they kind of throw a curveball at the Packers and say, okay, sometimes we're going to have Murray in there, sometimes we're going to have Brissett, because they're two completely different quarterbacks. I guess Murray would worry me more just because of the scrambling. Brissett is an okay quarterback. He threw a bad interception in that game. He's you know, he's not mobile, so if you can get a pass rush on him, I think he can affect him. And Murray's just a wild card, you know. You just don't know what you're getting with him, whether you're going to pick him off 3 times or he's just going to throw the ball into the stands or he's just going to check it down all game. Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, Jacoby Brissett's passer rating against the Colts last week was 89 and change. It was actually a couple percentage, tenths of a percentage point higher than Kyler Murray's on the season, which is high 88s. So the reality for me, I'm not overly worried about either of these quarterbacks against this defense. You know, there was plenty of Packers defenses in the past that I felt like it would be an easy answer, Kyler Murray, because they just didn't have the speed to match up front. I don't worry about that with this defense. They got plenty. I'm not worried about Kyler Murray's speed. This defense is plenty fast. The type of quarterback that worries me against this defense is next week, Aaron Rodgers, a guy that knows just catch and release. Do you know what I mean? Diagnosed so quickly and can nickel and dime you. And, you know, it kind of – we'll see how the Bengals-Steelers game, the icy hot bowl, turns out. But basically like a Joe Flacco who has a better arm. Like, that's an Aaron Rodgers right now, right? That type of quarterback, a Dak Prescott, so someone that diagnosed quick, get rid of the football before you really have a chance to get your pass rush home. I don't think either of these quarterbacks can do that, not consistently enough. So I'm not worried about either of these quarterbacks. I think the real test is when you go against a veteran that diagnoses fast.
Okay. As far as the Packers offensively, and as far as matching up with Arizona on defense, obviously they played the Cardinals last season, but they added a lot of different pieces. I think of guys like Josh Sweat and Calais Campbell. Like, they have some, you know, solid pieces on this Cardinals defense that, you know, they've had a couple games where they've been solid, haven't given up a whole lot of points. Just, you know, what do you think about the Packers offense as they prepare for this match?
I think it's a little bit of a wild card because I don't think the Packers are playing all that well on offense. I think Jordan Love is making plays, just enough plays that matter, that tip the scale. I think the fact they got Josh Jacobs going last week was a good sign for them. And the way Jonathan Taylor ran against them, that might be a good sign for what he does this week. I don't know. Jonathan Taylor's a special back. But Josh Jacobs is pretty darn good in his own right. So I think you're going to see the Packers try to establish him again. But what you're really seeing, I think, is it's Jordan Love hit or miss. And I don't know if we're seeing real continuity, real chemistry in the passing game. Starting to see a little bit more of it with Matthew Golden. And I think when they get Christian Watson back, then that's going to be even more, take more time to get chemistry with all these guys. But I don't really see them having like a really dangerous pass game right now.
Yeah.
They just are able to move the ball, and then they count on Love making a really spectacular play at some point, some kind of really nice throw to get someone open.
Yeah,
right. And he's done that. You know, it feels a little nitpicky because you look at what he did against the Bengals. He completed over 70% of his passes and averaged 10 yards per pass. That is by definition, dangerous. Like, that doesn't happen in this league. That's tough to do. But it does feel disjointed. You know, I think it's clearly a huge deal that they're starting to get Josh Jacobs untracked in the run game. He's got 179 rushing yards the last 2 weeks, 180 combined the first three games. And he also, obviously, the last 2 weeks has 150 scrimmage yards in both games. Whatever Josh Jacobs provides in the passing game as a receiver, good. You'll take it. I mean, that's nice, obviously. Nothing wrong with that. This offense needs him to run the football. And so for the mere fact that for the first time this season he averaged more than 4 yards per carry in a game, that was huge. You know, more efficient. They blocked it better. That second touchdown, I don't know that I agree with Josh Jacobs. They could have fallen and still gotten up and gotten to the end zone. But, boy, it was as easy of a touchdown as you'll ever get, and he hit it hard, and all the elements were there. So it's starting to look better in the run game, and I do think when the run game comes, it will only help the efficiency and the disjointedness of the passing game. But, it kind of feels nitpicky because they're explosive. They're great on third down. Like, they're doing a lot of good elements. They just haven't put it all together yet. When they do, they look like they could be pretty good.
Yeah, I want to see them take advantage of however teams are playing them. So last week, Cincinnati just threw, you know, caution to the wind and did not try to stop Jacobs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the first time I've seen a team just keep their safeties back the entire game. And the Packers didn't really make them pay for it till second half, I don't think. And so if Arizona's going to, you know, bring a guy up, then I think they need to throw the ball. They need to be explosive throwing the ball. Start making teams pay for the way that you're covering them. And I don't feel like they've really done that, except maybe the second half of the Bengals game.
Yeah. You know, the other part with the offense, missing Jaden Reed and Christian Watson does matter. And I understand that injuries are part of the game. I'm not going to use that as a crutch or an excuse. But when you really think about it, they've probably been even a little bit better than you can – if you have your two best receivers not part of the offense for an extended period of time, not a lot of offenses in the league can do what they've done. So it is a testament to the depth that they have. And I'm not exactly surprised that it doesn't look like they're hitting on all cylinders when they don't have all cylinders with them. I'm very curious to see what it looks like when those two guys come back this season, when Christian Watson has – not only return, but got him back into football shape and the swing of things. Jaden Reed, the same thing. If that happens later in the year, what does that look like? I'm very curious about that.
I will say, speaking of Christian Watson, after talking with him, seems like you say you're getting closer and closer to him finally getting on the field. What were your kind of takeaways? I know you were over there talking with him, I guess as a follow-up to Watson, because I guess the biggest thing is he just wants to stack days, I guess. Was that pretty much the thing?
Weeks. You want to sag multiple weeks, which is no surprise. Weeks. I mean, this guy hasn't – as good as the ACL recovery's been, he just hasn't played football. You need him playing football, get him practice, and then you put him in the game. He did have a small sampling of team reps last week. I asked him, was it more on Wednesday? And he said, yeah. So it does seem like they're increasing his team reps this week. I wouldn't be surprised if he's out there this week. Spoon, the point that you made last week about just giving him a handful of plays, like, and decoy. See, you know, a decoy, and just more than anything, not even more than a decoy, just start to acclimate him back to football, back to games. Just start that process, because it's going to be a slow, gradual process. It's not like he's going to just first week come back and have over 50 snaps in a game. That's not happening. So just throw him out there for 10, 15 snaps and start that acclimation process. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens this week.
My thought process has changed now because they didn't play him in that game. So, you know, Cardinals Field, that's going to be great. You know, their turf is awesome. But then the following week, they're in Pittsburgh, and that stadium is just a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, they're replacing the turf, but maybe you just wait till his full 3 weeks is up and then play him after the Pittsburgh game. I mean, why? Who do they have? They play at home against Carolina. Mm. Now I'm starting to think maybe it's better to just give him 3 weeks of practice and, you know, then send him out. I'd be nervous about putting him out in Pittsburgh.
I think, though, there's going to – any time a player returns from this injury, there's going to be those initial nerves regardless, right? Especially for a guy that plays that position, a lot of open field cutting and those sort of things. I mean, yeah, the fear of the trenches someone rolls up on it or something, but they're not making the same cuts. If they do return him this week, it does give you the opportunity to see what it looks like, how he's really doing, because you can throw him through all of the tests you want, all the practice reps you want, but what does he look like in the game? So that gives you the opportunity to see that and then maybe make that determination for Pittsburgh for that playing surface there, depending on how it looks this week. I could see that being an avenue as well. But to your point, they don't really need – it's October. They need him in December. They need him in January.
And I'm not
– Do that.
The Pittsburgh thing, I'm not worried about his knee. You know, he's just been susceptible to so many other things that, you know, maybe just try to take some of the risk out of it and get him started on – you know, field. Of course, he blew out his knee here in Green Bay.
Right.
I don't know. It's just a thought. It's just a thought I had.
It's interesting.
The concern is because when he blew out his knee, he was compensating for what was the injury that made him miss the
couple. Yeah, man. Well, it's I can't remember what he had last year.
But he came back early from an injury, and he was compensating still. He was compensating still, and that, I think, especially with this injury, is going to be the main thing, is the strength in a place where you're not compensating at all any other part of your body. If that's the case, then at that point, maybe you're ready to give it some live snaps, but not until that point. Like, you do not want him compensating anywhere else.
Yeah. It's so fascinating how you could approach it, because even for me, I think about like Zach Tom. He went the distance against the Bengals, played all 61 snaps on offense, and he admitted he was sore. He admitted he was hurting, and I mean, he missed practice yesterday on Wednesday. He came back on Thursday. So, again, like, you can imagine there's going to be some soreness with Watson. Just when are you going to get him acclimated back onto the field will be really that million dollar question.
And rustiness. He hasn't
it's like, get it regularly out
like gone against a guy who's going to, you know, jam him at the line, or, mm-hmm. you know, somebody's going to try to throw him into next week once he catches the ball. He's going to try to put a shot on him. You know, he hasn't blocked, he hasn't gotten rolled up on, you know, from behind, all those kind of things. So, you know, I mean, at some point you got to put him out there, you know, right. You just do it and that's that. But
yeah.
We'll see.
I was asking him, is there anything you can possibly do to simulate game shape? Like, is there anything you can do? He's like, no, not really. Like, you have to play the game. Like, mm-hmm. that's where football shape comes from, is by playing real live football. And until that happens, you can be as strong as you want. You can be as conditioned as you got to actually know what it's like to do all that while getting hit. Yeah. It's just no supplement for that.
You're maybe Micah Parsons. Like, he didn't need much of a ramp up.
He's a freak.
He's a unicorn.
Yeah.
Unicorn.
Yeah. I mean, he was pretty good right out of the bat.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate. But
also,
yeah.
maybe not entirely injured, but, you know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the back, right? Yeah.
The back.
What were in those steroid shots, yeah. epidural shots,
cats.
Right?
Steroid.
All right. I guess we can kind of stick with the injury front, I guess, if you will, because we talk about Zach Tom, Anthony Belton returned to practice. So I guess with that there alone, as far as the offensive line, it'll be fascinating to watch that group actually having some continuity and actually using all of their starters, because I guess it does kind of bounce off what you saw against the Bengals. Aaron Banks played, Zach Tom played, and they had some good moments. And now if you're going to have some of your depth pieces, again, it should only be a positive for this group, especially after seeing the Lions and then, yeah. Again, against
and
the Bengals.
Who's the only guy who's played every snap for the offensive line?
Is it Elton Jenkins?
That's right.
Yeah.
Elton Jenkins, the oldest guy and, you know, the newest position, and he's been the Iron Man so far. You know, and now he's asked to play special teams because of he wasn't playing special teams till they got – field goals blocked and extra points blocked. So, I think it's actually been good for him. I think he's been better the last game or two.
Yeah.
And now he needs Banks next to him. I think Morgan is starting to take over the right guard position. I'm starting to think that that's going to be his full-time position at some point, just because, you know, he gives you more as a pass blocker. And while Ryan, you know, you want him in there at some point because he can run block, but Morgan's just probably more reliable pass blocking, I think.
Yeah. Any just thoughts at all on the O-line or maybe even D-line, just anything at all that you're curious about from, let's say, the front?
My biggest thought is, the thing I'm wondering is this now going to be a season-long thing where they keep the starters on field goal and extra point, or is that something where as that gets settled, do you start taking one guy off, replacing another guy off, and kind of just gradually going back to what most teams do? Because it's an unusual thing to have.
Yeah, you can take Jenkins off and put Anthony Belton in there. Anthony Belton was on the block team. So that would be one thing I would do. You know, I would trust Anthony Belton. It's hard to get around a 350-pound dude.
Yeah.
When Jacob Monk gets healthy, he's another guy who could take someone's spot. Mm-hmm. He's experienced enough to be able to do it. But right now, no.
No, not right now. No. But long term, yeah. Do you ever go back to the way things
you
were
have
before
to.
Entirely? Is it partly? Like, how does it look?
In December, I don't want, you know, if I'm Matt LaFleur, I don't want Elton Jenkins putting on 10 extra snaps. I mean, he only played five. He played five last week, special team snaps. But still, that's a lot, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I guess we can kind of wrap it up and talk a little bit about special teams.
Yeah, we can actually throw some flowers at them.
You know, I miss a game.
We did after the game.
I miss a game and there's no special teams issues.
Yeah, nice.
I'm starting to think the problem is me.
Well,
we can that's all that thought bubble.
We'll leave that alone. No, but, I mean, that's true because, like you said, we talked about it definitely by far from top to bottom special teams' best performance. Like I said, the coverage was good. The protection was good. They even bring in a backup kicker, Lucas Havrisik, and he was perfect on all of his kicks. I mean, not even nitpicking, just still the one question is punt return. I'm still wondering how they will approach that. But I'm wondering.
Penalties, too.
Penalty, yeah, I think they had two penalties.
Yeah, that's got to stop.
Yeah, the one with Bo Melton.
That was kind of a bogus penalty.
Right.
I didn't think he really held
it. The thing is,
obviously,
though,
Hoppers was bad.
Was a yeah.
When your reputation's out there that you have a lot of penalties, now officials are looking for it. They're on top of it. They're cued into it. You want to get some of those calls.
Yeah.
You got to fix your reputation.
Yeah, so that is going to be intriguing. But I guess as far as – I'll start with kicker, and then I'll talk on punt return because McManus, who knows what's going to happen there, especially because we can kind of bounce off what Matt LaFleur talked about during his pre-practice press conference. So he typically kicks on Wednesdays and Fridays. So he wouldn't have kicked on this Thursday regardless, and he didn't kick on Wednesday. So for him – I guess as far as what Matt LaFleur said, as far as what a veteran, just like if he didn't kick at all this week and used them on Sunday, as far as what Matt LaFleur said, did he seem like he would be comfortable with that idea?
Yeah, yeah. And I think he would have been less comfortable last Sunday if McManus, even if McManus had said, you know, I'm not feeling any discomfort, I think he would have still been kind of nervous about it. But I think if they... Even if he doesn't kick Friday, if he comes out in warm-ups, I mean, that's what I would do. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, just give him the whole week and then check him on Sunday, and you still have Havrisik. You don't need his roster spot right now. I mean, they're at 52 with him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let him recover and then see how he feels on Sunday. But, you know, if he's ready to go, you got to kick them because it could come, you know, games are won and lost on field goals, as we've seen.
Yeah. So. And Ryan, I guess since you are back this week, what's going to go wrong for special teams?
Well, you know, anything that can is liable to go wrong with that unit. But I do think they deserve credit for recognizing, okay, there's a real problem here. And then by any means necessary, doing whatever it takes to fix it. If that means your entire offensive line goes out there, you're starting five, put them out there, fix it. And they did for a week. Now, 1 week does not a fix make.
Right.
They have to continue that. That's what it's about. I do not think that the fact that they had one good week of special teams means that now you can trust the special teams. Mm. It's going to take longer time than that. But they recognized the problem, and they took extraordinary measures to solve it, and for 1 week it worked, and they should get some credit for that.
That's it. Each and every week, prove that you'll do no harm.
Yep.
That's the key to success. Just don't hurt that unit. So. Yeah.
Well, and for the first time, they actually did something that helped them, which was kickoff returns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all of a sudden have a pretty decent duo back there with Savion Williams and Bo Melton.
Yeah.
Both, I mean, Melton's averaging 32 yards a return, and Savion Williams is averaging almost 28.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, you got teams having to think about that a little bit. I do wonder, I'm going to ask Bisaccia today whether Melton would be an option on punt returns.
Mm-hmm.
He can't catch. He's a receiver. But I don't remember him taking them in training camp. I'd have to go back and look at my notes and see if he was one of the guys.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to think that now using Golden is probably not a good idea.
At this point,
he's starting to become more a bigger part of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
So let him focus on that. And, you know, Dobbs is like what Charles Woodson was at the end of his career, you know, when you thought, man, this is the guy who could return one any time, and really all you got was like 5 yards after every return. So,
well, not only is Golden a bigger role in the offense now, he's not very good at punt return. Like, yeah. That's an even bigger reason not to put him back there.
And well, yeah,
it's not surprising. He's never done it before. So, but I'm wondering about the other guy, you know, because Savion Williams did actually take some punt return reps in camp, and he is a receiver, and he looks really, really good on kickoff return. I said it at the near the end of training camp. I'd like to see him get some. Yeah, I'm curious if he gets some punt return reps, and I'm still there. Like I, because right now what you have is a completely impotent punt return. As good as the kickoff returns look, it's completely impotent on punt return. I think at some point you put him in practice, you give him some reps, and I think it'd be very interesting if Savion Williams could give you something. He shows when he's got the ball in his hand, he's pretty explosive.
Yeah, but at least at this point, just have Dobbs, a guy you know will catch the ball. He'll know when to fair catch it and when to run it.
Do no harm.
Yeah, do no harm.
At some point, though, you know, you want to be a Super Bowl team. Mm-hmm. Your special teams have to be more than just a hold serve kind of a unit, you know. They got to start making things happen.
Especially because there are other contenders in this conference who have special teams that can do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be playing those teams in the biggest games of the year. It can't be a one-sided mismatch on special teams.
Yeah, you can't just go in there with, you know, okay, we lose that one. You know, that's one part of the game we lose.
That's true.
I'll go, I don't know if he can do it or not, but Savion Williams at punt return, if he can do it, that is a potential solution to that because there's some actual dynamic explosiveness there that is just lacking now. I don't know if he can do it or not, but it might be worth it to find out.
It's fascinating with him, especially when I think about punt, because at least with kick return, he has that time to really get his speed and get going
downhill.
It's easy
to catch the ball, too.
In that as well. And so with punt, it's different. So I don't know.
Melton's more of a juke guy, you know, which is what I thought of with him.
Fair point.
But I don't know if he can catch a ball. I mean, he's a receiver, but it's a different skill, you know, catching punts.
Yeah. But at least you could say a thumbs up, if you will, a check, a tip of the flowers to Savion, at least for kick return when the ball was in the landing zone.
Yeah.
And since he did it, they're like, we're going to kick this in the landing zone and see what he does with it. He actually caught it and he ran. And like you said, you know, good things actually happened. He had some good positive yardage in that situation. So.
Yeah. And if you look, when they kicked it to Melton, he's like, I'm returning this hell or high water. You know, he's going after the ball because he wants to do it. Savion Williams is a rookie and not really sure. So I think it's good to have both of them back, to have, you know, a veteran back who's can kind of show him, be aggressive and go for it.
Yeah.
You know, don't let this stuff bounce in front of you.
Yeah, that's a great point because I think of the example, even though it was a holding penalty during the punt return with Matthew Golden, Bo Melton was getting his block. But Golden yelled a fair catch, and he was yelling at him, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he had a huge lane.
Nothing, all of that. Again, even though it was a hold, but again, those type of situations. So having a bat guy that can kind of help walk you through things has definitely been beneficial. So as we wrap things up, guys, any final words, thoughts? Ryan, you can start it off as we wrap up the pod and get ready for Arizona.
I'm looking forward to going to a place that's actually warm. The cold has affected me more than I'd like to admit this time of year. I know it's only October, but it's coming, and it's a nice time to get to the desert.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm the Kentucky kid, too, Indiana as well, so I'm still not used to the level of Wisconsin cold.
Yeah.
Final words.
I, you know, first long trip, and I'm just there.
So you won't get fined.
I don't know. I think this game will be decided by like 6 or 7. You know?
Yes.
Oh God, no.
Yes.
Help me.
Maybe 6, 7.
Yes.
You say that like those numbers mean something.
They mean everything. I don't know what that means though, but still, that's the perp. That's probably. I mean, the Packers are 6.5 point favorites.
I don't understand this thing.
6.5, 7.5.
We talked about it before, Dominique. You're just as bad as the kids. I have no appetite for this new trend. I do. They're Arabic numerals, is what they are. I do not understand in any way what's funny. When we were kids, we did dumb stuff that we thought was funny. You know, the Budweiser. Waza. Yeah, we were on that trend, right? And but at least you're saying something in a funny way. And that's not funny either. I'm not saying like that's hilarious. It's not. But what on earth is funny about two Arabic numerals, six and seven? I'm pounding
you're
the table.
You're that mad about it. Just, two numbers did that.
The microphone's going down. I am just so over this.
Hey, that's why I'm going to keep doing it.
What's funny? We know that. What's funny about it?
Your reaction. That's what makes me laugh, that you don't like it. So that's why I do it. But now Spoon just rejuvenated me doing that.
You got him going. You got me going.
He just added another, at least one more year to the known.
But that I'm always really late to everything. So,
he's on
it. I mean, usually I'm like 2 to 3 years behind something, and then
six to 7 years behind.
That's right.
Please don't be fully on this trade. Now, Dominique does not need help here. He needs help. He just doesn't need any support when it comes to this 6-7 craze.
I need a lot of support and a lot of help and probably therapy too, but that's for another podcast. And guys, let's end this thing.
Yeah.
And thank you all so much. And we appreciate you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominic.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.